All right, it's Dave Player back with you, and you see Paul Lisnick almost daily on WGN-TV News with his political analysis. He also hosts WGN-TV's Political Report on Sunday morning. He's also an author, a lawyer. Are you a dentist too, Paul? I mean, you got so many titles, I can't even... No, he's not a dentist.
I should floss more.
You should. And Paul Lisnick joins us tonight. How you doing, buddy?
Hello, David. Good to see you. It's a beautiful day, beautiful night out.
It is. It's going to be a little rough going home, I think. But it's, you know, it's what we live in Chicago, right? I mean, we're not in Miami.
This is what we signed up for.
And that is. Before we get to your book, and you got a new book out, I wanted to talk just a little bit about some current events happening here. Now, President Biden just wrapped his first 10 days in office. 42 executive orders already.
Yeah, you know, there's two ways to accomplish something, Dave. There is getting legislation passed, and there's the executive order.
Right.
And, of course, when President Obama started doing executive orders because he couldn't get Congress to do anything,
right.
Remember his famous line, I've got a pen and I've got a phone, he took a lot of flack for that. Then President Trump came in and signed far more executive orders than President Obama. And now President Biden has come in, and in his first 10 days or so, has signed certainly a record number of executive orders, because basically Biden's view is there's no time to wait. We can't wait for Congress to get its act together and pass legislation.
How long has the executive order been out there? Is it always been there?
Oh, it's always been a tool, but it's just, you know, presidents, look, we've never had a Congress this dysfunctional in such a long time, really. And so that's the problem. If Congress could get itself to function, you know, it could do some things, but it can't, and it won't. So, you know, Biden's got to do what he's got to do. Look, but here's the problem with an executive order. Number one, you can have courts step in. So Biden on day one signed an order saying, okay, no deportations for 100 days to give us a chance to review the policies. And a Trump-appointed judge in Texas, Southern District of Texas, very, very conservative area, steps in and says, hold it. We're going to put a stop to your pause because Texas will be hurt if it can't continue to deport. So a 14-day stop. The point is, when you have executive orders, somebody can file a lawsuit, a court can step in and put a hold on it.
Gotcha.
As they did to Trump, by the way, with his Muslim ban.
That's right. He's also attempting to move fast on another $1.9 trillion relief package, which I'm going to say we kind of need right now. We need some infusion.
Well, and on this one, look, Biden has made it clear he wants Congress to act on it. I mean, Congress is going to have to do something with it. He can't do that package alone, really. He could try and do pieces of it, but he'd have problems. So basically, he's telling Congress to get it together. Two ways to make that happen. One, Congress passes it. Don't hold your breath on that. Number two, you know, something that happened in Nixon's day, and things were so messy with Nixon resigning that people sort of didn't pay attention to one change that happened back then, which was essentially Congress being given the power once every budget to do what's called reconciliation, which basically means we're not going to deal with the filibuster and the 60 votes we need to pass this. We're just going to need a majority of 51, which the Democrats have. So expect that while the president has wanted Republicans to get on board, if they don't, then Democrats will clearly use the reconciliation process.
Right.
What that means is they'll only need 51 votes to get that $1.9 trillion budget effort passed for COVID, and Biden will have them do that. What's really interesting this year, Dave, is that Congress never actually passed a budget last year. They never actually used the reconciliation. So Biden actually gets two shots. He gets two reconciliation efforts. Second one will clearly be an employment package, something along those lines. But his efforts on immigration and other things that he wants to do, he won't be able to do it by reconciliation. He'll need Congress's help with the executive order.
Well, I will say that the process, you know, if you're working with a good bank, you know, this PPP, the Paycheck Protection Plan, my business has hit it twice. I mean, because we were down last year, and my business partner and I signed up for it again, and we're already approved by the SBA. So it's moving fast, but you know, businesses around the country, especially restaurants and bars and all these museums and art houses and so forth, just they really need the help.
Well, I've always said the arts have taken it the biggest because they were the first to shut down. Yeah. They will be the last to come up. And they really do need the help. And you know what's interesting? The argument that some Republicans, like Senator Susan Collins, are making, it's not that they're fighting some sort of relief package. There are some who just say, hey, we just did one. We don't need one right now. But the argument, and perhaps there's some fairness to it, is to say, look, do you just give everybody, you know, all of this money? Or maybe we should find out. I mean, if somebody makes less than $75,000, which is who qualifies for that money, you know, but they're employed. In other words, they've always made less than $75,000.
Right. Right.
They're not suffering right now. They're not COVID impacted. Why are we giving them a check when they're just living life as normal? We need to be giving it to people who are now making that amount of money and or are no longer making that kind of money because of COVID. So that's been the question. Is Republicans have said, look, you know, many have said, let's give help, but let's be sure we're giving it to the people who need it. The problem is, how do you do that? Step in and have people apply that way? It's really tough.
Absolutely. And then we've got the Trump impeachment. Where do you think this is going to go? Where's this really going to end up, Paul?
Well, here's what I actually think is becoming clear to me right now. So he will not be impeached, although I'm going to put a little caveat on that, which is because they need 17 Republicans to join the ranks, and President Trump's really control over the Republican Party remains so strong, it's not going to happen. However, you shouldn't say that, or I shouldn't say that, until the evidence is presented, because it's going to be some pretty powerful evidence, and these jurors, who are the senators, were also victims. The scene of the crime is where they're sitting, right? So we're going to see whether or not anything changes based on the power of the evidence and, you know, any kind of public movement. But the more likely thing that's going to happen is that they will not remove him. There'll be an effort to censure. They need a majority vote to do that. Censure just means they write a resolution, and if President Trump were to come to the Senate and get yelled at, that's what would happen.
Gotcha.
There's also going to be an effort, I think, tied to the censure if they don't convict him, to keep him from running again in 2024. Some believe they could keep him from running in 2024 with just a majority vote, and they can do that whether or not they convict him. My view, and, you know, I teach constitutional law, my view is that is not going to be very possible to do, and whether they can attach that to a censure effort is also fairly unclear, but I think that's where the efforts are going to be.
See, I forgot teacher in the beginning of this whole conversation. That's another one right there.
You do that as well. 1980s.
Yes, you have.
You have.
We're talking to Paul Liznick. Back to Chicago. We got, you know, Chicago public school families really versus the Chicago teachers union. And I have to say, and I know you are great at keeping the conversation in the middle, but I might take it in a different direction here. But the Archdiocese of Chicago had children in schools 100% capacity since August. And, you know, it was 0.2% during the study that, you know, there was a COVID rates. I mean, it's been very low and it's been very well done. Why can't we get these kids back in school? I mean, depression, anxiety increases when these kids don't have a sense of belonging, no sports, no team building. You know, serious mental health issues, you know, teen suicide, you know, it's very isolating right now.
Well, you're certainly right about that. And I don't have the answer. I'm not a physician, so
right.
I don't have the answer or a COVID specialist as to what makes it work. But here's the thing. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people saying, and you'll see this, you know, teachers, they just don't want to go back to work. They don't want to be in the classroom. They just, you know, this is too good a gig right now. And I don't personally accept that response. I mean, you know, again, I have been a teacher. Teachers become teachers because they like teaching.
Right.
And, you know, you do hear the stories of other places, other cities, people have gone back to school, and some of the teachers catch COVID and some have passed away. So I think there's a lot of fear going on. I think there's a lot of concern. Clearly there's not enough open dialogue, perhaps at the table, mm-hmm. But the truth of it is, I do think it's not a situation of teachers, and if there's any teachers listening, I imagine they can call it and chime in. I don't think this is about that they don't want to go in to the classroom. I think it's about that they're fearful. And it's hard to blame somebody. That's not a necessarily
right.
a rational, irrational
yeah.
view. It's hard to blame somebody for the fear. Look, I have that fear. You know, I'm so cautious everywhere I go because nobody knows.
Right. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Now, switching gears a little bit, you have a new novel out called Assume Treason. And treason's a heavy word being used on both sides of the aisle right now. So perfect timing for this.
You know, my first fiction, I've written 15 books, but my first fiction book was the one that came out a couple of years ago called Assume Guilt, part of the series, and that was about corrupt Illinois politicians. Who knew that that would be fiction? And then Assume Treason is, it's a presidential election with white supremacy and bombings going on, and who knew that would come to play?
Yeah.
So, but by the way, assuming that a lot of your listeners are probably WGN-TV fans, they'll get a kick out of the fact that a lot of the characters in the book are named after WGN personalities.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
the president is Mike Toomey. Me, we've got Jeff Hoover in there. It's all sort of for fun, but the book's so far getting nice reviews, and that's really cool. So I hope people will check it out. Amazon, bookstores, your house, wherever they can find it.
Yeah, wherever they can find it. I mean, but again, tell folks a little bit about the first book, Assume Guilt. So tell us a little bit about that story.
So assumed guilt was the story of, again, corrupt Illinois politicians, a governor of Illinois who may or may not have committed murder, and lots of, you know, intrigue that goes. The story actually opens with the defendant being found guilty. Then, of course, the question is of murder. The question is, at the end, was there really a is there a surprise ending, or is there a actual valid murder victory? I have to tell you, I gave a copy of the book to Governor Pritzker, and I said, you know, Governor, by the way, when you read this, it is about a governor who may or may not have committed murder. It could be a lot of, you know, corrupt politicians. Mm-hmm. But I promise you, I finished it before you took office. And he kind of laughed. He goes, oh, it's about Blago? He was kidding.
Oh.
That was a pretty funny line.
Wow.
He was kidding.
So, again, Assume Treason, available at Amazon.com. Same with Assume Guilt. What do you have on the political report tomorrow, Paul?
Tomorrow morning, we've got former Congressman Joe Walsh coming on. You know, he was a Tea Party guy. He was, you know, Trumpy before there was Trumpy. And basically, I'm going to hold his feet to the fire and sort of say, you know, didn't you start all of this? Weren't you the problem? We'll see what his answer is to that. And also, you know, taking a look at the Biden agenda and where things are going to go with Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia of the 4th District. The focus is going to be on immigration. And he's got a new act that he's trying to get passed called the New Way Forward Act, and we'll talk about that as well. So, as always, a full half hour at 9 a.m. on Channel 9, where, you know, we're up against a lot of political shows, obviously, around the country, but we do what we can to keep things, it's national, it's local, but we make sure the focus is always, you know, in the Chicagoland area, so people see folks that they're familiar with and they like. And I have to real quickly, because I'm sure we're wrapping up, but just want to give a plug to the ice cream war I'm having with WGN Radio's Steve Dale over at Windy City Suites, where he's telling people to buy banana pudding. I'm telling them to buy peppermint. The loser of this context makes a nice donation to the Anti-Cruelty Society.
Oh, all right.
We're just there this afternoon, continuing the fight. It goes on through February 14th.
Very nice.
Have everybody buy
Very nice.
Ice cream, Dave. Get your
peppermint. Get your peppermint ice cream. All right, this will do. Right. Paul Lisnick, be well, my friend. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, David. You as well.